5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another hour of Tech Talk. Just 1 hour for you this week. I know, I'm sorry. But you know, it's the big bosses. I don't have anything to do with it. It's up to them. Robin Christofferson's here from AbilityNet. As always, hello to you, Robin.
Hi guys, how you doing? Stephen, keeping well?
As always, yes. Well, you know me, I am always keeping well because I have technology to keep me company. And of course my wife, I should always, really should do that. My wife really should come first on this list, not technology. The dog can be third, yeah, that's fine. Andy's also there, hello Andy.
Hello, hello. Yes, Robin and I, there will then be fourth and fifth, I guess, in that list.
Oh, you're on that list, right? Oh, I see, right, okay, So I was just checking the list there, fine. Yes, absolutely, totally, 100% agree. Look, we've got lots to talk about today. We've got news on an amazing new game that is out. Now, it's interesting because we'd been talking in our WhatsApp group about this, and I'd mentioned that The Last of Us Part 2 was coming out, and it was a big deal, and Andy, your response I thought was kind of priceless, and it was actually almost perfect for what most people will be thinking when it comes to this, which is, so what? It's just another game. Which is kind of what you thought, wasn't it?
Yeah, my initial reaction was, well, I'd love to play the game, but I can't because obviously it's a PlayStation 5 exclusive and I'm an Xbox boy. But yeah, my other reaction was, well, I never played the first one, so yeah, what's the fuss about it? And apparently there is quite a lot of fuss about it.
Well, there is. You said PlayStation 5. Is that right? Is it PlayStation 5, not PlayStation?
It's not available on 4? Yes. I say 4. 5's the new one coming out, so it will be available on 5 as well. But what I mean by that is a PlayStation exclusive.
Right, okay.
Which means you won't be able to play it on Xbox. So, Stephen, you can play it.
So I can, and actually, that's the point. I can play this game because it has got an amazing amount of accessibility in it. So we're going to get a report on that today as to what that means and what that gameplay is like. So looking forward to that from one of our producers. Also going to be talking a bit later about a new research project from Microsoft and the City University of London, looking for us as blind people to get involved to help improve image recognition apps such as Seeing AI or TapTapC, for example. Basically, any app that uses artificial intelligence to understand its surroundings, well, we can help out making it better, which I'm all for. So that coming up, we'll also get into the email inbox as well. There's plenty there. And I just want to mention something. I pick up on a couple of things from last week. I know that you've been in trouble already on the emails, Robin. We'll get to that in a minute. But
as usual.
Well, I was going to say as usual. Yeah, this is nothing unusual here. But I just wanted to pick up on something because I'd mentioned last week, or maybe it was a week before, actually. I can't remember when I mentioned it, but I did mention about the Orbit Reader having translation on it on board to translate between various grades of Braille. And I got a bit of an update on this. I was hoping to have it in time for the show. But for those of you who are interested in this, the Orbit Reader 20 does not have onboard translation. However, the Orbit Reader 20 Plus, the new one that's coming out, and the Orbit Reader 40, which is also new and is coming soon to RNIB's shop, that will have translation on board. So if you're planning on using it with that intention, as in you get a book that you want, but it's in grade 2 and you can read grade 1, it will do automatic translation for you. The Orbit Reader 20 doesn't have that.
Because it's just software. So why can't they update the firmware in the Orbit 20?
Yeah, you tell them, Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah, get it fixed.
Yeah. Yeah, come on, guys.
Before we'll get into the emails a bit later, but you had an email, was it John Pym that got in touch this week, who giving you into trouble for something? What was it this week? What have you done now?
Yeah, so lastly, last time we were talking about Teams and how confusing, challenging it is. It's strictly speaking accessible, but the usability gap is massive. And there are some scripts. I said, were they perhaps Jeff Bishop? But no, it's a chap called Doug Lee, and they're really, really good. So if you go to dlee, that's dlee.org, /teams, then that's the page where you can download those scripts. And there's also a link there to a guide, which will talk you through it, which actually is a really good way of kind of becoming familiar with Teams on Windows anyway. So these are JAWS scripts. And you can also get to that tutorial if you've installed the scripts in the usual way with insert F1 twice quickly. So dlee.org/teams.
And you don't have to use these scripts, do you? I mean, it's not that it won't work if you don't have this installed. Just for anyone who's coming to this new, it's not.
Yeah, yeah. So like with anything, they layer on a lot of useful keystrokes and announcements and that sort of thing. And so in some cases, they suppress over waffly announcements too. So yeah.
Is that a technical term?
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, big thanks to John Pym for telling us or putting me right on that one.
Okay, that's great. Well, yeah, as we were saying, The Last of Us Part 2 is a new game which is out. Now, often when we talk about games that are accessible to blind people, Robin, we're talking about audio-led games.
Frots.
Yeah, frots again, yeah. He loves his frauds. In this case, this is a mainstream game coming out with full accessibility. What does that mean, though? We're talking here, as Andy says, it's a PlayStation game. It's available to anybody who wants to play it. But why and what has made it so accessible to blind people? Why is it accessible? How is it accessible? Well, Polina Kohorev is our reporter here on this one, and she's here to tell us more about it. Polina.
Well, Stephen, The Last of Us is a very popular game from Naughty Dog, and ever since its release in 2013, fans have been eagerly awaiting a follow-up. So when the sequel finally dropped in June this year, just over 7 years after the release of the first part, there was much hype around the game already. But what came as a pleasant surprise was the creator's approach to accessibility, which made this immersive story finally available to a much wider audience. Just have a listen.
Now let me do one more scan to see if there's any more enemies around with R1 and square.
Jesus.
I don't hear any more brrp sounds, so there's no enemies around. There is an item near here, because I can hear the... So there's an item over here. So go towards that item and press triangle.
Semi-auto pistol. Has no craftable upgrade. Bow.
This is,
has
so no this craftable is the crafting table.
Now, visually impaired gamers like Aegon from PS I'm Blind are finally able to enjoy all aspects of this release. But how does it all work in practice? Well, Ross Megan, who loved the first game and was excited to get started on The Last of Us 2, joins me now on the line. Hi, Ross.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing? You're enjoying the game?
Very good. Yeah, very good. Loving it. I've just come off a session now and, yeah, very much enjoying it. Can't wait to get stuck back in on it later.
So what's so different about this game? Everyone's praising it online, but what makes it special and different to other games at the market right now?
Yeah, I think you touched on it there. I think the big thing, particularly for people with a visual impairment, is how accessible the game is in the wider context of the video games industry. I think when I think back to the first game back in 2013, it was a fantastic game, but in terms of accessibility, there wasn't much there. And now here we are 7 years later. It seems like they've put as much resources as they could into accessibility. The buzz around it in certainly in our community is about how accessible it is and how anybody from partially sighted to totally blind is being able to enjoy the game in the same way as somebody who's fully sighted.
So what features in particular do you find help you when you play the game?
There's so many, but if I could pick out a couple, I'd say the high contrast feature. It's something I've not seen on a game before. It will essentially darken the backgrounds and make it so the enemies and your allies and items that you need to pick up stand out from the background. It will make them bold and just makes it so much easier to see enemies and teammates for those people who do have some useful vision. And secondly, I think the inclusion of a screen reader. It's something that I've only ever seen used on the game Minecraft. But as far as big AAA titles are concerned, this is the first time I've ever seen a screen reader. So it will, whenever you're going through the menus, it will announce what item you're on. It'll announce the description of the item, whether it's toggled on or off. And when you're in the gameplay, it will announce text that appears on the screen. It will read any in-game items like letters. It will read things like the ammo in your weapon. It's just a fantastic tool just for keeping up with what's going on in the game. And I think for a third, that I found myself using a lot is the navigation features, where you can press a button on your controller and the camera on the game will point you in the direction of where you need to go to progress the story. For a visually impaired person, it's just a great tool to have, because obviously sometimes we struggle to actually see where we're supposed to go. There are audio cues as well. Obviously, if you struggle to see things like boxes to climb over, or if you need to crouch, or if you need to climb somewhere, or if you need to take down an enemy, at all those points, the game will give you customized audio feedback for each of those actions so that you know when you need to perform them.
So you mentioned a lot of features, and the one thing with the game that's really great is you can start with almost a default setting, but the game goes beyond that because you can customize everything. So you can adjust it to your own sight condition and your own sight loss.
Yeah, I mean, from the get-go, as soon as you load up the game, one of the first things you're greeted with is accessibility. And as you say, it's a very sort of customizable interface. You can sort of make the game behave and make the features behave how you want them to behave. If you don't want one feature, you don't have to have it. If you want all of them, by all means, have all of them. As well, for people that have other disabilities like hearing impairments and physical impairments, there's custom accessibility features for those. You can assign specific accessibility features to certain buttons on the controller. For example, on the PlayStation, there is a touchpad at the top of the controller where you can sort of swipe on it in different directions to perform certain actions. And in this game, you can, for example, assign the high contrast feature to turn on and off when you swipe left. So it just prevents you having to go into the menu every time when you want to enable that feature. It's the sort of thing where you might only want it on for combat, for when you're fighting enemies, and you might not want it on in other circumstances.
Will it be hard to go back to other games that don't have as many features or don't cater to sight loss?
Yeah, I think it will 100%. Over the years, I found myself sort of drifting away from video games as it's become more difficult for me to pick up new games because of my visual impairment. I've sort of drifted away from it a bit. I don't tend to try out new games anymore because of the lack of accessibility. I hope that this is, I guess, a sign for the future in a way, that what Naughty Dog has done can be kind of the shot in the arm of all the other AAA companies that have the resources to do these things. I just hope it's something that more companies take note of in the future, because it's been proved now that these features can be implemented if the effort is put into it.
Obviously, there's a lot you enjoy about the game, but what do you think they could improve?
The big thing that could be improved on is audio narration. For example, if Ellie, the protagonist, if she's writing something in her journal or looking at a particular object or performing a certain action, that without that audio narration, you will have no idea if it's going on. So I think audio narration throughout would be probably the biggest thing that is missing from this game.
Do you think the lack of accessibility on the market comes from the fact that a lot of people have a presumption that if you're blind or visually impaired, you're not going to want to play video games?
I think it comes back to the thing we talk about a lot of the time about, like, this social model of disabilities. With a game like this, people have seen online and on YouTube and on all the social media channels, when a company does take the time and put the effort into these accessibility features, people with a visual impairment or any other kind of disability, they will play the game because it will mean that they can. I think that's the simple thing of it. People might assume that visually impaired people don't play games as much as sighted people or don't want to play the games, but the fact of the matter is, visually impaired people don't play the games because they can, because the accessibility generally hasn't been considered. I'd encourage people to try this particular game, because I think the more people that try these features, the more people that use these features, the more it's going to alert these big companies to the fact that the demand is there if they just put the resources into it. So I just encourage people to try it out. Obviously, I think there's still a little way to go for people that are completely blind, but even so, with a game like this, there's been videos of people online who are completely blind who are being able to play this game with some difficulties, but they are still being able to play it, whereas in the past they haven't been able to play it at all. So for those people that do try it, I'd encourage them to give their feedback onto the company, post online, talk about it with friends, spread the word, raise the awareness of accessibility within video games, because it has been a big issue in the past and it still is a big issue.
As Ross said, give the game a go, check out if you like it, share it with your friends, contact Naughty Dog, contact Sony, PlayStation, Xbox, all those companies, let them know why accessibility is important, and maybe in the future we can see more games embrace accessibility features and more games made available for everyone. But in the meantime, Ross, Megan, thank you so much for speaking with me and good luck with finishing the game.
Thank you very much. It's scary at times, but I'm still having fun with it. Thank you.
That was Polina Kohorev there speaking to Ross, and really interesting to hear, Robin, this idea of these games being made more accessible. I guess I wonder, will this just be a one-off experience? Will this be something that is implemented in more in games? You know, the suggestion, you know, of the fact that this company has gone off and put so much effort into it does, you know, give you that hope, but... what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is brilliant. And as Ross mentioned there, he would strongly encourage people to give it a go, to turn on those features, because Naughty Dog, brilliant name for a software company, will get that information. It's called telemetry. It's a way that software companies track what people are doing. So Microsoft always knows if you've got, you know, narrator switched on or you're using larger text or whatever. That's really valuable feedback for those companies. So they'll know how many people are using these accessibility features and hence probably need them. So the more of us that go out and support these titles, give it a go, as he said, although it sounds a bit scary. and then hopefully this won't be the last of it.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I see, yeah. See what you did there. That's quite clever, yeah. yeah, it's an interesting one. I've seen a few tweets from people saying, you know, let's not get too excited here, folks, because this is likely to be a one-off, or, you know, and, you know, we can't imagine that every game is going to be playable in that regard. You know, driving games, for example, are never going to be as you know, well, potentially they could be, but, you know, at the moment I can't really imagine how, with a huge amount of effort going into it to make it work. And whatever way you do it, it would always, you'd always feel like the passenger in a driver game if you were in that situation, especially if someone's constantly telling you where to drive. You think, well, just, you know what, take the wheel yourself, just you do it. And it's interesting because you, Robin, you talked a lot about this before, around audio description. You talk about how you don't like watching television because you almost feel like it's an add-on, that it's just an extra bit that's been bolted on the side to make it work for you, and it doesn't give you actually the full picture, because that would be almost impossible to do. And especially, for example, in a program where there's lots of dense dialogue. Do you feel the same way about these games? I mean, listening to just that little bit of gameplay at the start there, do you have the same view on that, that it's just an add-on, that it's not giving you it's not immersing you in the game that perhaps in the way you would like?
Well, I can't help thinking that I would probably feel in that situation, you know, at a disadvantage, which is what I don't like about watching TV programs. You know, I feel like I'm missing a lot of stuff. And that does often come down to the quality of the AD. You know, there's obvious stuff going on. There's a bit of laughter. You know, was that just some, you know, funny little one character raised their eyebrows and did a little pout at the other character? Whatever it might be. You know, I want to know that. I want to know what caused a little ripple of laughs. You know, there's dead air there. There's no one talking. So why can't they just tell us? So it's all about how well it's done. And that often obviously applies to this as well. Now, interestingly enough, these platform games, sorry, these games for consoles, console games, that's the word I'm looking for. You know, these AAA titles, this is for hardcore gamers. Now, hardcore gaming has been around since the 90s, arguably even earlier, and the people that grew up with it are now at the stage where they need accessibility. They're in their 50s, they find it really difficult to, you know, all this information, the stats that pop up about people are often very small because they're kind of over the person's head or something, and the person might be far off in the distance. So I've often heard people bemoaning the fact that they struggle now with normal titles. So I'm really interested to see how the broader inclusiveness of this particular game is, you know, how people find it who have other potentially less demanding needs. But the very fact that a fully blind person could use this if they chose to, you know, they might really be desperate to give it a go. And a lot of blind console gamers have been struggling with games and having some success that aren't as inclusive as this. So I think this is a brilliant thing. And anyone that's got how much is it though? It's going to be quite pricey.
I was going to say, Andy, yeah, that's a good question. How much do these games cost? They're not cheap, are they?
You'd have to want to, I think.
Robin mentioned there that this is one of the AAA category games. So you're going to set you back maybe £50-55 for a new copy of a game. Oh. And, of course, if you don't have a PlayStation, you're going to need to pick that up as well. And that's going to obviously set you back. Now, I can imagine the PlayStation's being discounted because obviously the new one's coming out soon. But still, you're going to be dropping an awful lot of money just to play an accessible game.
Well, you know, frustrating. I think perspective is so important in these things, and you know, I often try to, especially with sighted people, I always try and kind of give some, you know, relevant context with all of this. Let's imagine you walk into one of those big game stores, and the only one I can think of now is the one called Game. You walk in and there's shelves and shelves and shelves of games that are available for all different platforms, and it seems to me that the of all the games that are available on all the consoles that are available, the one that I can pick up and play is The Last of Us Part 2. Mm-hmm. Everything else is inaccessible. And when you think about it in that from that perspective, it does change your view slightly on it. So, you know, you talk about the cost of a PlayStation. Yeah. For the benefit of one game?
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, it's...
You now have a PlayStation. You can play The Last of Us. You've completed that.
What now next? What?
Well, I can give Minecraft a try, maybe. No, I can't, because that's mainly visual. I can't play a shooting game because that's such, you know, there's so much activity going on that you need more than just your eyesight. You need every single sense going to you to be able to play games like that. And when that piece from Polina was playing there, I was thinking, well, what other games could there be? Because puzzle games become even more complicated. Maybe the more narrative-driven games. I remember last year when I was chatting to the Pitch Black guys that I brought up Bioshock. That was a hugely narrative-driven game. But, yeah, I don't know. It's at the minute, I'm hoping this kicks in and more companies start doing
it. I mean, this isn't a specialist game. So no. This has obviously got general appeal. So if you've got teenagers with a PS4 who would want to play this anyway, then at least we have the option of joining in if we like the sound of it. So, yeah, give it a go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, we don't talk much about games on the show, and it's one area that we don't pick up on a lot because I genuinely don't feel popular area for our listeners, I don't think, and certainly I certainly don't feel it's an area that excites me as much as it does others. Because I love the sound of this game, I do, and I'd love to try. I do have a PlayStation, so I'm not sure if I want to drop £55 on it. But you know, at least I know I could play it. That's something. I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a try one day.
When they sell it
in a bargain bin.
Yeah, £5. The other aspect that I brought up to you, Stephen, is this is The Last of Us 2.
Yes.
So there is a previous title in this. How much of the story are you missing? Like, do you know Ellie's backstory? Is it covered in this game? Because there was a Last of Us 1, and there's a whole other game there. How much of that is covered in this game? Mm. So this game's accessible, but do you know the backstory of the game? This is the other issue. So,
Yeah, I think all these games tend to come with an element of assumption in regards to the capability of the player. And, you know, for example, I've got no idea where any of the buttons really are on a PlayStation remote. So, you know, when it comes to, I'm just, you know, bashing keys, hoping that I'm going to either shoot someone, probably myself, you know, in the process of trying to, you know, pick up a piece of paper or whatever it is I'm trying to do.
You're driving your bus. So yeah. You accidentally shoot someone as you're driving around in Grand Theft Auto, yeah.
I have done that. I was actually, one day I hit the wrong button and I shot my front window out and I've no idea why. So yeah, it doesn't always work that way. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the other thing that kind of comes to mind, and I'll move on in a minute, I promise, but the one thing that kind of stood out as well from what I was hearing from just that little bit of demo from PSN Blind and Aegon there, was that they're not using the character's voice to describe what's going on. So I would kind of love it to be where the, and a bit, it's a bit like what you're talking about there, Robin, you know, it's kind of investing in the whole picture. So it's not a case of when you walk up to a pistol that's on the floor and you want to know what that is so you can decide whether to pick it up or not. You don't want to have a screen reader read that. You want the character to say, oh, look, a pistol, and it's a such and such. You know, you kind of want that level of inclusion in the game, so it doesn't feel like this disembodied voice giving you the information. I think that's why.
Yeah, but if it's the disembodied voice or nothing, then obviously that would help as well, because they were flagging that some scenes are not audio described, which would be frustrating, I think.
Yeah. Anyway,
Frots.
Yeah, just play with Frots. Just get that downloaded. Or use those games that you get on the Echo, you know, that kind of thing. Those are always good fun. Anyway, let's move on. Time for this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yeah, we get lots of your emails in. Thank you for those. We're going to turn to Andy, who's got the inbox open. What's come in?
Well, we're going to start by talking about games again, but this is a different kind of games. So this first email is from Sivaji. I work for the welfare of the visually impaired college students in India through a non-profit, which is Help the Blind Foundation. It's based in Chennai in India. He says, I'm looking for games for the VI students, particularly accessible crossword puzzles and accessible Scrabble with a view to improving their English vocabulary. These students are from rural areas of India and come from very poor families and have not had exposure to proper English language education until their secondary levels. I therefore feel that games like crosswords and Scrabble will help stimulate their curiosity and excitement in learning the language, preferably if it refers to clues to places and things relevant in the Indian context. I should be much obliged if you could let us know where it is available. Also, I read somewhere that the newspaper crossword puzzles can be made accessible if their online versions are made available as .pug files. As I'm not a techie, I do not understand this. Can you please help decipher this? Thanks, and best regards. Yes, that's from Shivaji.
Okay. Right, well, obviously, the first thing I would suggest is, and it depends on, obviously, where you are in the world. If you're in India, I don't know if this will apply, but in the RNIB shop, for example, there are tons of accessible games, physical games that you can buy, like Scrabble. In fact, what was it I bought? I bought Domino's, Connect Four, and Scrabble, because we decided to have a games night one night, and we thought, let's get a pile of games. So we ordered a few from the RNIB shop, and we got them, and they were brilliant, really good fun, very accessible, and all of that. So, you know, that's obviously resources like that. And, you know, I imagine the RNIB shop does sell worldwide and send worldwide, so I'm pretty sure that's the case. Although if it's not, blame someone else. But you know,
they're not selling The Last of Us 2, put it that way.
No, not getting that one. No, but yeah, that would be good for the kind of physical games. I kind of think, Robin, though, with this question, should we look at the Amazon Echo with a view to an answer to a lot of this?
Yeah, shock. I would definitely, I mean, it's what we were talking about a moment ago. There are definitely loads of word-based games on the Echo. Whether or not you've got a screen, you know, they're brilliant. They're really, really good. There is obviously an India skill store for the Echo. So I'm hoping, touch wood, there'll be a number of them there. If they're not, just change your region and you'll pick up all the skills from the US skill store or the UK skill store. That's really easy to do. So assuming we're talking English, oh, he does want to improve their English, doesn't he? Yeah. So yeah, there's loads of them. Word Pop, Word Snake, Word Scramble, Puzzler is a fully fledged crossword one. And if you go for the in-skill purchases, then you get 9x9 grids, as many as you can eat, and they are really, really good. Otherwise, it's a 5x5. That might suffice for the kind of vocabulary for your students, but Puzzler, really accessible. If you have one with a screen, then you can see it on the screen and you can review the grid with voice view. But otherwise, just do it with your ears and everything is explained. You know, each word is given like blank S, blank, blank P, whatever it might be. So yeah, that's brilliant. Really good. Four Down is the only accessible iOS-based crossword app that I know of. I don't know if you guys know of other ones, but Four Down is brilliant. So that's F-O-U-R space D-O-W-N. Definitely have a go with that one. And .pug was mentioned there. So this is basically just a way of wrapping up code, node.js code, into it's a way of sending someone a bunch of HTML. So when you open it, you will basically get a working HTML-based app. So,
so it's a bit like having a website, you know, a local website almost. You could,
yeah,
kind of.
It's a way of sending a website or a web application that would run locally. Well, I don't know. Maybe it would make calls out to different APIs and things. But yeah, so if you know, if someone said, yes, there are some accessible, and that's the key thing, because this is just HTML, so it could be accessible, it might not, .pug crossword, you know, apps out there, then yeah, get them to send them to you or download them or whatever. Open them up in a browser and see if they work.
Pug as in the dog.
Yeah, right. That's right, yeah. Bit of a hairy file format there, but yeah, so .pug.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, I've never done a search for accessible crosswords available in the .pug format, but there may well be.
That's interesting. Very interesting. Okay, all right. Well, hopefully that answers your question. Andy?
So this next email from Nadia. Hi, guys. I hope you're all well. Just wanted to respond to a couple of comments from other emails. Firstly, yes, please, please, when you demonstrate anything involving a screen reader, can you slow it right down so we can hear it?
I hear you. Yes. I hear you. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again.
Yes, we'll hold him against that one. I'd also like to say that I agree 100% with Robin about the third generation Echo having too much bass. It really does seem to be the trend with any new type of speaker, whether it's a TV or a smart speaker. And I bet Stephen's new TV suffers from the same problem because of its sheer size. Now, I have a hearing condition called hyperacusis, I think that's how it's pronounced, which is, in English, means that you hear things too much and noises seem twice as loud to me as they do to anyone else. Consequently, I find the third generation uncomfortable to listen to. Yes, the sound quality is much better in the sense that it's clearer, but the bass, just too much. And on the second generation, I would listen to music on the volume 3 setting, and I now have to listen to it on volume 2. Spoken word is even worse. I hope that doesn't include us. I need to start whispering. On volume 2 or 3, it's too quiet. If I turn it up to volume 4, it's okay, until the narrator of an audiobook raises their voice, so that I actually find myself missing this second generation Echo Dot. I'm finding I have to listen to music and audiobooks on small speakers, like a phone or a tablet, so that I lose that bass quality. And of course, some small speakers are very clear, but have a very sharp sound that can be equally uncomfortable. On a sidetrack, one of the phone audiobook apps I use is Big Finish. I don't know if you've heard of it, but I thought that some of the other listeners might have. I'm trying to figure out how to delete a book from my phone if I need to. Doesn't seem to be any or an obvious option to delete like there is on Easy Reader or Audible. And apparently you have to hold down your finger on the title or something. I tried that, but I must be doing the gesture wrong because nothing happened. If anyone can explain it better, I would appreciate it. I'm using a Synaptic phone, so that's the Android OS. Finally, has anyone noticed that after you've been using Easy Reader for a while and the screen shuts off automatically, as phones do, if you try to activate the screen again, for example, to pause the book, nothing appears to happen. It's like the phone itself has gone to sleep. The book is playing, but the phone itself doesn't respond unless there's some kind of message or pop-up window appearing on the screen that I don't know about. Has anyone else experienced this? Otherwise, the app is excellent, and I'm really enjoying using it. Apologies for the long email, but that's Nadia.
Okay, Nadia. Well, thank you for the email. Appreciate that. And I think our listeners will come back with a lot of answers to those questions for sure. But the point you asked there about the screen going to sleep. Now, is that, Robin, is that because the phone has gone to sleep and that tapping exactly the screen won't come back up without turning the phone on? So maybe tap to wake needs to be enabled there, perhaps?
Yeah, so I don't know if she's talking about an iPhone or Android or the Synaptic phone. I don't know if the Easy Reader...
Well, that's true, yeah. She said she uses the Synaptic phone, doesn't she? Yeah.
I mean, it's Android-based, but can you go out of the Synaptic bit
to
run
you
other
can.
Apps? Oh, yeah. Okay, great. So that's probably what she's talking about. But yeah, I mean, phones just go to sleep, so you could change the length of time before the phone sleeps or just tap the power button to wake it up. I mean, the reason why... If there's a notification that's just come in, means that you can now pause your media. That's because, yeah, the notification has woken up the screen. So, yeah, that'll be what it is. Is there a tap to wake? It might depend on
the device,
that particular phone.
Yeah, I think it is available on certain devices. Something, for example, the Samsung ones will pick up as soon as you pick up the phone, it'll kick into life. And actually, that's a great feature about it. Not only that, it enacts the Face ID and launches you right into the phone. So, you know, before you even thought about it, you're in and working, which I really like. But I don't know what phone comes with it. It usually is a Samsung phone. I think it's the J range, or at least it was the J5, I think, at one point. They may have updated that since, that it comes with it. But that wouldn't have that function, I don't think. Anyway, if anyone else is a Synaptic user, and I'm sure there are lots of our listeners who are, then please do get in touch and share maybe how you've got around this. Okay, thank you for
Can
that.
Briefly address her issue of the bassiness of new
versions. Oh, yes. I thought you might want to say something about this.
Yeah, I mean, she probably knows this already, but you can change the bass, mid and treble of those, and the easiest way to do that is to say to the A lady, put your bass to -6, because they're between 6 and -6. Change your mid range to 0, whatever you want to do.
I didn't know you could do that treble. Just by asking her.
Yeah, +6. And the other thing is, if you have one with a 3.5mm jack at the back, then get one of those cheap unpowered speakers that she talked about, whack it in there, and then it'll go through there. I know she said that some of those small speakers are pretty horrible to listen to as well, but you know, if you've got one that just has a 3.5mm jack on it, pop it in, see if that helps, because the unpowered ones are going to be a lot quieter and less bassy. Yeah. Depending on the make of the speaker, but yeah, give that a go too.
It's funny you say that, because I had a pair of Logitech speakers, very cheap, like $13.99 or something. It was not expensive at all. And I bought them purely to be voiceover speakers. In fact, I bought them for Jaws, actually, on a computer I was using Kurzweil 1000 on, and I just wanted to listen to voice only. And I find that the newer speakers, and I had a pair of Bose companion speakers, and they were terrible. So bassy.
It's the new thing.
It is, yeah, but really heavy bass and quite low treble as well. It was not a pleasant mix at all. And it was quite hard to listen to, and I actually preferred the cheap $13.99 ones. They were just much better, because all I'm listening to at that point is voice. That's all I'm listening to. And in fact, I've done this as well now. Even though I've got my studio set up here at home and I've got really nice speakers to listen to music or productions I'm working on or whatever, when I'm actually just wanting to listen to voiceover or Jaws, I just turn off my mixing desk, which puts the audio back through the MacBook, and I just listen to the speakers of that. Sometimes it's just the simple option is the best option, you know. And I don't, unlike you, I like to have my ears free some of the day. So, you know, I don't like things pushed into my ears constantly. So it's kind of nice to
have you
to be doing
noticed
that.
It with the new TV? Have there been any issues with the audio on that?
Well, I use a soundbar. I've got a Bose soundbar that's connected to it, and I prefer that because it does give you better clarity of speech, which is often a big problem these days in programs. I don't have any hearing issues as such, so I don't have any worries or concerns on that level. But the TV itself, I've never actually heard the audio, because when it was installed, the guys came in, they installed it, and they got it all up on the wall. I didn't hear the audio from it. And generally, I find the audio from TVs to be awful anyway. You know, the TV picture is great, but you want a soundbar if you're going to do it properly and actually hear what you're, you know, hear the audio properly. So, interesting. But, okay, well, hope that answers some of your questions, Nadia, and I'm sure the rest will come in from our listeners over the next week or so.
One quick tip while we're talking about TVs and audio. Audio description, if you turn that on, often 5.1 surround sound and Dolby Atmos versions get switched down to stereo. So the audio track that the TV or the Roku box or whatever serves up has been dumbed down to just plain stereo. The only platform that provides full Dolby 5.1 or even Dolby Atmos, if it's supported by the movie or whatever, is the Apple TV. So if you've got AD switched on and you've got a brilliant setup like the soundbar and speakers all in every part of your room, or even just AirPods connected to the TV or Bluetooth headset or whatever, you must have it through the Apple TV to get Atmos. Otherwise, yeah, you just, I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the poor, you know, the crumbs that we get thrown. I mean, who are the, you know, stakeholder, the audience that would better, most appreciate Atmos?
I know.
Or 5.1? And we don't get it with the AD. So,
anyway. Yeah, so frustrating. Interestingly, though, just as an aside point, I don't think it affects the Apple TV yet, but there are some improvements coming for the users of the AirPods Pro. One being that if you are an Apple TV owner and two of you in the family have AirPods Pro, you can now share audio from the Apple TV once iOS 14 has been released, and I guess the new version of tvOS as well has been released. There will be an update coming, so that'll be September time, and that will enable you to listen and share audio. You can already do that on the phone. You can share your AirPods Pros. I think you can share previous versions as well. Maybe I'm wrong on that. It always seems to talk about the Pros, but never the other ones. But if you've got the AirPods Pros, you can share audio from your phone as well. So both of you, for example, could be in the back of a cab listening to your audiobook or listening to your music of your choice, you know, without bothering anyone else, if that's what you want to do. And then the other point, which I think is probably more pertinent to this, is that with the iPad Pro, at least that was the demonstration that was given at WWDC, the iPad Pro with a pair of AirPods Pros in, you'd be able to enjoy Atmos surround sound through these two earpieces. So just having the two AirPod Pros in your ears, you'll get that full stereoscopic sound from every direction, top, back, left, bottom, whatever. It'll come from everywhere. And that will be interesting. But of course, if all that's cut off because the AD comes on, well, that's a bit rubbish. So we'll see what comes out of that. Maybe not from Apple, though, like you're saying. The Apple seem to have got it sussed. Okay, look, we're going to get to some other things because we've got loads of emails to get through. We will get to another pile of emails for you in just a moment. But for now, to this.
News from the internet.
And some news of a new research project now from Microsoft and City University of London, which the intention of is to help improve image recognition apps, like, for example, Seeing AI or TapTapSee. We're going to hear now from Lida Theodoru from Microsoft to tell us about the Orbit project.
We would like specifically to help build better smart computer vision applications to recognize objects. So the motivation behind the project comes from the limitations that existing applications have at the moment. So we know that current applications like Seeing AI are very useful to many blind and low vision people because they allow you to take a picture of a scene and then announce what objects are in that scene. So, for example, it might say a person sitting on a sofa. However, at the moment, these applications cannot tell you which of the things they recognize are yours. So they might tell you that this is a mug, but they won't tell you that this is your mug. And the reason that this is happening is that they don't know what things are particularly important to users who are blind or have low vision. And this is because all the existing data sets that are trained on are collected from sighted users. So that means that if, for example, your white cane gets mixed up with someone else's, so the app won't be able to recognize it because images of white canes don't exist in the data sets the applications are trained on. Yeah, so to explain this a bit more, at the moment, all the data sets that are available for personal object recognition are very small. So they contain data collected from maybe 10 users, and they contain around 100 of images, which is a quite low number. And also there has been no effort to collect images of objects that are maybe particularly important to users who are blind or have low vision. So yeah, with this project, we want to create a larger data set of labeled videos of objects collected from blind and low vision users. And the data set will be publicly available to be used from researchers, developers, or organizations to build better artificial intelligence systems. And I really believe that a dataset like that will make significant improvements in the object recognition technologies for blind people.
So very interesting project that we can all get involved in as blind people. There is a website you can go to for more information, which is orbit.city.ac.uk. That is orbit.city.ac.uk if you would like to find out more. And you'll be able to contact Lida Theodoro from the organisation there via that that web address, which is simply orbit.city.ac.uk. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? The idea of us all having our say and being able to get involved in making these image libraries better, which we really need in order to improve this technology.
Absolutely. I was I worked with them to improve the app to because it was just supremely obscure in how it was asking you to take these videos, and the information needed some polishing up as well. So if it's still challenging for you to take these, you have to take 80 videos, guys, but there is some financial remuneration, which makes it all worthwhile.
Cash!
Yeah. So you have to find 10 objects. You have to do a number of different videos from different angles and under different situations with the item on different surfaces and that sort of thing. The thing I'm struggling with, which is why I haven't done my 80 videos yet, is finding the objects that I feel are sufficiently kind of unique to visual impairment. So white cane, yeah, I'd have to dig it out though. Don't know where it is.
Oh, that's shocking.
Sam Brown.
Sam Brown. And not the singer.
Maybe the pouch that I use for the dog food, which is standard issue for
Hang on. We've got to play a game here. Without Googling it, Andy, what is a Sam Brown?
Come on. All right, then.
It's not Cockney rhyming slang, is it? No. I hope not.
Okay, all the guide dog owners are shouting now.
Yes.
So it's standard kit that you get. You get a lead and a harness.
You get a dog.
Yeah. You get two collars, a standard collar and a play collar.
Play collar's got
a bell on, and they've both got the guide dog tag on. You get a grooming kit, so that would be another thing. Actually, while I'm talking to you, I'm realizing that there is actually more things that we
so
you get grooming brush and comb and chamois leather. You get a Sam Brown, which is a luminous strap that goes around your waist, but there's also a connected bit that's diagonal across your chest and over one shoulder. So that's what it is. It's luminous stuff to make sure that you're very visible at night. There is an armband that's luminous as well.
I never wore mine.
Does the dog get his own Sam Brown?
Well, he kind of does.
The bit that goes around the front of his chest has got that luminous stuff on it as well.
I'm familiar with guide dogs in the sense of Quigley in the RNIB Connect Radio offices, and I see him when he goes out for his morning tinkle or whatever, that he'll get dressed up in his gear. So I'm familiar with that regards, but no, I'd never heard of a Sam Brown before.
No.
Yeah, I mean, having had this conversation, I'm actually now able to go out and to fulfil my commitment to this. So thank you very much. Other things, because the reason why I thought I'm going to struggle to find 10 things is that apart from a cane, which I'd have to dig out from somewhere, I don't have any specialist devices. So things like your Victor Reader Stream, a Trekker Breeze, a Braille Note Taker, your Mantis Q and all that sort of stuff. All of those would be top items to learn, because they're definitely not going to be in the standard data set that Google or Microsoft have. So all that kind of thing, anything that's VI specific, but you don't absolutely have to stick to that. If you've got a particular bunch of keys that you want to include in the data set, absolutely fine. They're not really strict about that. But the more people that do it, the quicker it will be done. And the more useful it will be in the long term. And if you're thinking, well, how as a blind person can I effectively take these videos? Don't worry, it's all in hand. It's in the instructions. It's aimed at people that can't see to be able to do these. And in a way, we're the best people to do it because we won't get the thing directly in shot. It might be a little bit obscured by something else, or, they want that kind of real life way of being able to, find these things that someone who's sighted wouldn't necessarily arrange it in that real life way that we would be using going forward. So give it a go, guys.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, look, we could continue with more news if there's something you want to pick up on, Robin, but otherwise we're going back to the emails, so it's up to you.
What I'm going to say is next week, guys, we are going to go through the accessibility announcements of iOS, tvOS, watchOS, all of the OSs, because you might be thinking, well, come on, guys. You know, there's been a lot that we've learned since last week when we covered our instant reactions from WWDC. We'll bring you those next week.
And an iPhone SE review as well. We've been hanging on to this one because it's a good one. And we're looking forward to that. David Woodbridge recorded this for his IC podcast. He's offered to let us play it out here on the show. So we're really pleased about that. That is going to be on next week's show. But yes, okay, let's get back to the emails then. Back to the inbox, Andy. Okay. What else have we got?
So the next two emails are very contrasting. So this first one is full of praise for us. This is from Alan. Hi, Stephen. Must write and say thank you for Tech Talk. I was listening recently and scrolling through my podcasts when you broadcast a review about the Olympus voice recorder. I was so thrilled I bought one the next day from the RNIB. It does all you said, but I was lucky as they sent me all of the instructions in Braille. So now I am completely independent. Keep up the good work. I'll be listening. That's from Alan.
Sounds a bit threatening at the end there, Alan, if I'm honest with you. But yeah, okay, fine, right, yeah, fine. I'll be listening. No, listen, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. And I'm glad that it worked out well for you. Actually, it's important to say that any product you buy from the RNIB store online will come with... You have to tick the box, though, and you get the choice between audio and Braille instructions, which is brilliant. You get the instructions sent out to you as well. That's one of the benefits of buying from the RNIB shop. A lot of people don't realise that. You know, you get a lot of people saying, why buy it from there? But bear in mind as well, if you buy the same product on Amazon, you'll have to pay the VAT, which you don't pay on the products that you buy from the RNIB shop. So, you know, you can save some money and you get the instructions in a format that suits you. So definitely worth doing. Anyway, glad you're enjoying the show, Al. Thank you for listening in.
Now for the other side of the coin, this one is from Roger. Hi all, I really like the programme, except for all the rubbish talk in between items. you have so much information to give out, then get on with it. Can you let me know, is AbilityNet paying for all the adverts that you are giving? If not, then why don't you mention that there are loads of other accessibility companies out there and not specifically mention AbilityNet all the time. If Robin's company is paying for his services, then that's fine. Also, you keep saying that you have so many emails that you can't get round to, then why don't you do a separate podcast each week of all these emails and bring them up to date? You'd only need to do one, as there's no restriction on the length of a podcast. Your comments would be appreciated. That's from Roger.
Okay, Roger, well, thank you for that.
I think guilty as charged on every count except the AbilityNet one that I can clear up. So yeah, the rubbish, totally, hands
yeah,
up.
Yeah, so people understand the... Yeah, I mean, okay, I can't avoid that one. That's very valid and true. You can't argue with facts. But no, I mean, look, I think when it comes to, you know, ultimately this programme is a bit of a co-production, really, with AbilityNet. You, of course, being from AbilityNet. And when we got together, that was one of the things we talked about, was the benefit that would have in bringing the organisations together. And you do this on AbilityNet Time, don't you, which is...
Absolutely, great. Yeah. You get paid by RNIB, I get paid by AbilityNet. I like to think that because AbilityNet's a pan-disability organisation, then, you know, hopefully we say a little bit more about other disabilities because, you know, people with a vision impairment may have other disabilities. That's just life, isn't it? So, you know, maybe we don't even do that enough. But I'm aware that it's...
I don't think we mention AbilityNet very much at all, if I'm honest. I mean, we obviously talk a lot about RNIB. We do mention AbilityNet. But, of course, we've had representatives here from other charities and organisations along the way. We will always promote organisations doing well. And if you have suggestions that you want us to share of companies who are doing really well in this accessibility space, then I'm more than happy to talk about them. So, for sure. As for the separate podcast, well, we actually did a bit of that last week, didn't we? We got one extra episode... twisted the arm of the boss at RNIB Connect Radio and said, you know, can we have another hour? And we got that. We can't do that every week, unfortunately, but we get our hour and that is it. And the reason, I should say this, the reason we don't do too many podcast specials is because there are many people who listen to us purely on Freeview Channel 730. And, you know, the very reason we have that channel at RNIB Connect Radio, as opposed to just pushing everything online, is that we want to make sure we're accessible to as many people as possible. So, you know, I want to make sure that the show gets to everybody. And this isn't very much a tech show, but it's for everybody. So you can be someone who has no knowledge of tech. And I know there's many people who've been in touch with the show who say, look, I'm not really that into tech, but I like to hear you talk about it. And that's who the show is for, as well as for you, the geek, right? So, you know, we don't want to segment off or miss anyone out as a result of doing anything podcast specific. We do occasionally, we haven't done one for a long time, but we do occasionally do the odd geek out on Tech Talk podcast, where we get together and maybe get into a particular topic of interest. But it's usually a very geeky, technical thing that podcast listeners probably enjoy more if you're into your tech. And, you know, the people who are listening on 7:30 would be like, oh, come on. So, you know, we try and be as fair as we can with our output and give it to as many people as possible. So we have our hour on RNIB Connect Radio. We use that as much as we can. So that's the reason why we do what we do.
And it's worth mentioning that you can obviously listen to it on your phone through various radio apps and on the Echo. Just ask her to play RNIB Connect Radio. Can you get it on DAB?
No, you can't. No, we're not on DAB. No, we're not.
The other advice I'd give at this stage is that if you're listening to the podcast version, you could always listen to us at 2x speed and get through us in half an hour.
That's even better.
Yeah.
That 30-second fast forward, that's a useful thing as well when we're talking rubbish.
And you know, you can also listen to us on the phone. I can't remember. I'll need to get the details for you on this one because I didn't prep this one. But we should maybe mention this as well. There is a way you can now, you know, pick up your phone and you can dial up and listen to the show. And lots of people do that. Lots of people like listening to podcasts, particularly newspapers that way, because you can get access to it. Bearing in mind, again, it's really important to say this, there's a lot of people out there who don't have internet access, who don't want to have internet access, but still want information. How do you get that information to those people? Well, there are ways and means. So we're available on a whole wide range of platforms, but our key is that we
pick up the phone and are available. Speak to Stephen as well on the phone as well. Phone is personal number.
Yeah, just give me a call anytime.
Personal
yeah.
Tech talk.
I feel like that's the case half the time, if I'm honest. Anyway, that is it for our show this week. Thank you so much. We didn't get through any more emails. How typical. That's a slightly ironic one to end on. But yeah, there you go. But listen, thank you guys so much for being with me again. It's always a joy. And if you want to keep emailing in and you want to share your views and thoughts, then we would love to hear them. You can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can also follow RNIB Connect Radio on Twitter @RNIB Radio. And join us again next week for more emails, more of your thoughts, and, you know, picking up in particular some of those comments and questions from Nadia this week. I'm guessing a lot of you will want to respond to that. So get to your keyboards, get writing. Robin Christofferson and Andy Wynn, thank you again, guys.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.